Welcome everyone to CBCG's Saturday, as in the Eastern time zone, Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, early in the morning for a lot of others on the West Coast, and late at night for those in Australia and New Zealand. Christian Biblical Church of God's Go-To-Meeting 2, we call it. We get an opportunity to get together with family around the world, wherever they might be. With some, this is the only opportunity they have to get together. So every week we have the opportunity to hear from one of God's ministers, and this week we're going to hear from Roy Asante, and he's going to give us a message, and the title is Strive Now, Then Your Reward Will Come. So I present to you Roy Asante.
Thank you, Steve. And what brought my thoughts to this subject is something that happened recently. I was being actually under attack by a 4.5-year-old and a nearly three-year-old, my grandchildren. Rocco, I call him Mr. Rocco, and Savannah. And they had me cornered, and I don't know how I fell backwards, but I was going to be hurt, actually, Manola said. That I grabbed a chair and I fell and I changed the trajectory of the fall, that we have a chest freezer, and I fell right on the corner of this freezer and apparently chipped a piece of a lower vertebrae. And also there's a fine hairline crack along the ribs of the vertebrae. Well, I spent about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I don't know, on the ground, and groaning never felt so good. That's all I could do. And, you know, the little grandkids, they just cuddled me and comforted me, but I was in a lot of pain. And soon after, I was off in an ambulance. I had to listen to the sermon, the Sabbath sermon online. So I listened to that. And then I said, you better call an ambulance, because I couldn't get up. And I was off to hospital. So we're going to start Psalm 90. Look at Psalm 90. And what brought to mind was that, hey, vividly, we are not here to stay. It takes something like that to make you realize that you're physical. You're not invincible. You are extremely vulnerable, as a matter of fact. And so, we'll go to Psalm 90, and it was really impacted on me. You know, you have an experience, and it was really impacted on me forcefully that our time in the flesh ain't for keeps. If we're not here for the long haul, we truly are vulnerable. So, Psalm 90, and we'll look at verse 1. O Lord, from verse 1, Psalm 90. O Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth. I wonder how long the mountains been here. How long have you and I been here? A lot less than the mountains. Okay, or ever you had formed the earth and the world. Whoa, that's going back a bit. No living person has any knowledge of before the earth was here. How far back in time are we talking about? Even from everlasting forever. Wow. Can we grasp what's going on here? What's being said? Everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Never ending, no time. Did God invent time? Was there any time in God's mind a cessation of existence? I wonder. Before the creation, the physical creation. Verse 3. You turn man over to destruction and say, return, you children of men. Verse 4. Is interesting. And sometimes if we look at, well, what does that really mean? We do a few comparisons. For 1,000 years in your sight are as yesterday when it is past, and a watch in the night. A watch in the night. A watch in the night is a 4-hour time period. And if we look at the fact that, let's see, 1,000 years, okay, that's about 26 minutes for 100 years. So if someone lives for 100 years, to God, it's like, they say, 26 minutes? And 1,000 years, that's it, 4 hours. Imagine, at the start, God thought, well, when he created physical man to be temporary, he thought, well, let's give him 4 hours. Let's give him nearly 1,000. No, less than 4 hours. We're not built to last. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. You know, it's funny, a little thing like a chipped vertebrae gave me a completely different perspective. We take it for granted that we can get up, we can walk, we can jump, we can do these things, but when you have to get up very slowly and walk very slowly, I have sore legs on the side, under the hips, because I'm using muscles that I never really used before, keeping the back arched and back straight. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. This is admonishment. An admonishment that we're temporary and to take the calling that God has given us seriously indeed. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 3. For although we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. This is a, it goes on to talk about a matter of life and death. And we went through how long God has been here. Time means nothing. Okay, so life is an incredible thing. Okay, so when we talk about war, I think about the advice that a famous general of the of World War II gave the Allied troops. And while before they crossed the channel, General George S. Patton got his men there and he told them, he motivated them. I don't want to hear about anyone dying for their country, right? You have got to kill the enemy. You have got to destroy that enemy. Now we're talking spiritually here. And can you imagine those soldiers sitting there? They were going to go over, right, cross over to the channel, and they were going to have live bullets, bombs, shells, trajectories fired at them to kill them. So it truly was a matter of life and death. Okay, let's go to verse 4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the overthrowing of strongholds. For the weapons of our warfare. Yep. Same vein. What comes to mind is that pep talk that Patton gave those men who were going to go into live ammunition, live battle. And we have a fight for life, whether we realize it or not. This is serious business. Verse 5, for the casting down of vain imagination and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Our battle's mainly in the mind, in the heart, and it comes from outside. And bringing into captivity, again, military terms, into captivity, not being taken captive. Every thought not being taken captive by every thought, but bringing every thought into captivity, into the obedience of Christ. Now let's go to 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy and chapter 2. And interesting pieces of advice that General George S. Patton gave his men was this. And it is inspiring. He said, a pint of sweat now will save a gallon of blood later. Convert that to spiritual terms. A pint of sweat will save a gallon of blood. Yeah, he was really fanatical. But we need to be fanatical to seek life. 2 Timothy 2, and we'll start at verse 3. 2 Timothy 2, verse 3. You therefore endure hardship as a good soldier of Christ. Again, the same terminology, the same background. It is a war. It's a fight. It's a matter of life and death. It's serious. Verse 4. No one who is serving as a soldier, again, same thing, becomes involved in civilian pursuits so that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. Life and death, that's the situation, that's the thing, that's what we're talking about, and that's the realization, the reality of our journey and our calling. Now let's go to 1 Corinthians in chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Still talking a little bit about General George S. Patton. He was skilled with the use of the saber. The saber was a curved kind of a sword. And what they did was they had these duels, they had these fights and simulating battle, and they were all in their protective gear and so on. And what happened was that if anybody fought against General Patton, they had to be careful. Because this guy would not stop until, if you went down, if anyone went down, he would keep going till he made them black and blue and bruised. Because he had fight, war in his veins. And it is that serious. Our quest, I'm not talking about the flesh, but I'm doing a comparison here. Our quest is that serious. And if you weren't careful, you'd end up his officers would end up black and blue. It was training. Everything was simulation for battle. 1 Corinthians 9. As he said, he loved the sting of battle. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 25. For everyone is striving for mastery controls himself in all things. Of course, they do this so that they may receive a corruptible crown. But we are striving for an incorruptible crown. Okay, which is greater by comparison? Temporary or something that has no time limit, priceless, goes on forever? It's a prize that we need to be serious and strive for. Verse 26, I therefore so run, not as one who is uncertain. I wonder, did I pray today? Have I done much study? I think I will. Is that serious? We have to be on target, on duty. So as to say, so also I fight, he says. Paul was kind of like a spiritual George S. Patton. So also I fight not as one beating the air. Picture that saber and look out to any opponent. Right? So in a sense, God is instilling in us here through the Apostle Paul, the intensity that we need to have in this calling as the first fruits that share the greatest reward at this time. Verse 27, but I discipline my body, okay, and bring it into subjection. Well, we need to discipline and bring into subjection. There's a comparison there. It's a type. Lest after preaching to others, I myself be rejected. Well, let's go to Hebrews 12 now. Hebrews 12. And before I go to Hebrews 12, let's go there, Hebrews 12. I want to look at the word discipline. Discipline. He says, but I discipline my body. There is another word that is used here in other translations. I pommel my body. Now, pommel, used as a verb, is another term for pummel, right, which means pummel my body, which means that to pummel is to strike continuously with the fist, repeatedly. So you can look at the intensity of Paul. Never give up. Keep going. Never stop. Never say die. It's packed with action, his words, sheer determination, striving for mastery and mastery over sin. Hebrews 12. And the bar is set very high for us. Hebrews 12, verse 3. We're admonished. Now meditate deeply on him who endured such great hostility of sinners against himself so that you do not become weary and faint in your minds. For those that were in a contest with General Patton and the sabre, they had to be serious or they would be black and blue. I mean, that's just a comparison there. It's serious. It's a battle. It's training. Verse 4, you have not yet resisted to the point of losing blood in your struggle against sin. Okay, well, I'm going to go on a sidebar here. I'll go on a sidebar. Let's go to Psalm 39. I'll quote Psalm 39. We'll stay where we are. Now, I live in the Blue Mountains, a lovely area of outside of Sydney in Australia. And it's about 100 kilometres or 60 miles or so from Sydney, right? And I'll just leave that point there. In Psalm 39, verse 4, you can just write that down. It says, O Lord, make me to know, this is a sidebar, make me to know my end and the measure of my days. What is it that I may know how short-lived I am? Verse 5 is it. Behold, you have made my days as a handbreadth. 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 That is from the thumb to the little finger. That's it. That area there. From the thumb to the little finger of your hand. It's little. We're not here for long. Right? Okay, so I asked a question and I think, okay, I live 100 kilometres or 60 miles from Sydney. How many handbreadths is that? How many? A lot. A whole lot. Okay. A lot of life. A lot of lives. Well, and the span of my days is nothing before you. It's comparing our lifespan with God's lifespan, with the life that God has laid out for us to lay hold of. Okay. So surely every man at his best state is altogether vanity, Selah. Okay. We talked about how far I am from Sydney. What about something else? What about, you know, the creation? We know the creation is incredible. So what about the diameter of the earth? It's 12,742 kilometers or 7,700 miles. A handbreadth is our life. How many of those handbreadths go into that distance? That's the comparison that's given to us about what God is laying out for us. Life. That's life. Okay, let's just go a little bit more, a little bit more. The diameter of the sun is 1,391,000 kilometres or 864,928 miles. Okay? Compared to your life, a handbreadth, a handbreadth. I mean, how many handbreadths? what is God saying here? You know, that's all your life is. What is life? What's he really laying out, putting out for us? Let's go to Isaiah, Isaiah 40. Isaiah 40, and we'll go to verse 6. Now, but today in this form, we're just temporary. It's only a handbreadth. It's not much. That's all he's given us. That's all he has to give us. But the best is yet to come. Isaiah 40, and it's all worth it. More than worth it. Don't get your eyes off the goal. Remember, battle, warfare, it can take your life. Something so precious. No wonder I think sometimes there is weeping and gnashing of teeth for those that miss out when they see the vision. They can see it. Why didn't I know? Why wasn't I told? Well, you're being told. We have to meditate on God's word. Isaiah 40 verse 6, a voice says cry. And he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass or grass, grass. And the beauty of it is as the flower of the field. Now here's a picture apparently in Palestine, the hot desert wind can come and blow on a beautiful field of flowers, the hot desert wind, and in a matter of a few hours, they're gone. They're gone. They're all withered. It says, verse 7, the grass withers, the flower fades, because the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades. Here's a reference to that time again. Think about what we've been saying, handbreadth and distances, right? Let's just really realize what's being said here. But the word of our God will stand forever, forever, never ending. Okay, I've got a subtitle here. We must be changed. We must be changed. Jeremiah 18. Let's go to Jeremiah 18. You know, endless life, to get to that mindset that God is going to get us to, it requires trials. It requires hardships. They're indispensable. And they're needed. They must come. Jeremiah 18. And verse 1. The word of the Lord which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, the word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord saying, arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause you to hear my words. Okay, these are the words of God. What's going on? Verse 3, and then I went down to the potter's house, and behold, he was working at his wheel. Verse 4, and the vessel that he made of clay was ruined. Suddenly something went wrong and it was no good. Understand the comparison, what's being said here. The clay was no good. It was ruined in the potter's hand, in the hand of the potter. So he made it again into another vessel, as seemed good to the potter to make it. Verse 5, then the word of the Lord. Okay, did you see it? Now, take it in. This is the lesson. Then the word of the Lord came to me saying, verse 6, O house of Israel, can I not do what you, with you, even as this potter, says the Lord? Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hands, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel. All right, let's go to Isaiah 64. Isaiah 64, and we'll see that this comparison is also used by God individually to you, to me, to us. Isaiah 64 and verse 7. We are individually as clay in God's hands. Isaiah 64 verse 7. And there is no one who calls upon your name, who stirs himself up to take hold of you. For you have hidden your face from us and have consumed us away because of our iniquities. Our natural state needs to be changed. It follows that we have to be pommeled, changed, right? Like clay. Verse 8. But now, O Lord, you are our Father. In our time, God is our Father. It's pretty close there. You are our Father. And what are we? We are the clay. And you are our potter, right? And we all are the work of your hand. So he's going to pommel us. He's going to shape us. He's going to do things to us. And we just have to roll with the punches, so as to say. Even though things don't look right, they are, if we're in God's hands. Okay, let's go to 2 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 5. So what's happening? 2 Corinthians 5. What's happening to our personage, our character, you, me, as an individual? What is happening? What's this journey of salvation about? What's involved? Well, we're being changed. We're a lump of clay. And we're being changed, we're being made into a new creation. 2 Corinthians 5 verse 17. Therefore, if anyone be in Christ, he is a new creation. The old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. Okay, let's go to Romans 8. Romans 8. Now, after this existence in the flesh, right, it's going to be a new ball game. It's going to be a new existence. It's going to be a new reality. It's going to be a new universe, completely different. All this is temporary. It doesn't matter. What matters is here, the focus. This is why we're breathing. And, you know, I often say this crazy thing. I look at my hands and I think, yeah, this world, this society tells us that this just came as an accident, you know, designed. No, it's designed. No, it's an accident. They say, oh, it's designed. I mean, a car with wheels, with a steering wheel and engine and so on, that's designed. That's a product. It's been produced for a purpose and so on. But even a simple thing like a hand, oh, no, that just... It came from a one-cell amoeba out of the ocean. Oh, dear. Okay, so we're going to go to Romans 8 in verse 28. Romans 8, verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Verse 21. Because those whom he did foreknow, he also predestined to be, you know, sometimes a record gets stuck. But when there's an emphasis, it gets stuck to be what? To be conformed. That's what it's about. To the image of his own son, that he might be the firstborn amongst many brethren. All right, let's turn to 1 Peter. 1 Peter 4. 1 Peter 4. And the point is, on this journey of being conformed, changed like clay and pummeled and so on, what happens? 1 Peter 4 and verse 12. Difficulties, tests, hardships, they've got to come. Don't be surprised if there's a trial and I think, I think something, okay. It's part of the twisting, the molding. You don't have a say. You've got to roll with the punches. Roll with the twists, you're clay. This isn't life. This is a preparation for real life. Difficulties, tests, hardships must come. 1 Peter 4 and verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial among you which is taking place to test you. What does that guy do with the, I can't follow you because I just bought two yoke of oxen and I go to prove them. What did he mean? Well, he'd strap them up, put the plow behind them and let's see how they go. They got to pull evenly. Otherwise, it's no good. You know, he just made an investment probably in comparative cost of about 10 grand or so, bought himself, or maybe 15, bought himself a brand new live tractor. How does it work? Prove. See if they're going to do what they've got to do. So, okay, to test or prove, as if some strange thing were happening to you. Let's have a little look at Proverbs chapter 20. This is an easy one to remember. 2030. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 30. Now, imagine God giving us this advice. Imagine it. You're going to cop it. You're going to be in the firing line, but relax. It's good news. I love it. I love the way it's put. Proverbs 20 and verse 30. The stripes that wound purge away evil. So if it hurts, if it's painful, if the experience is gut-wrenching, well, it's for a purpose by an almighty, wise, loving Father and elder brother, Father in Christ. Because it says the stripes that wound purge away evil. Yes, strokes. So strokes cleanse the innermost parts of one being. Yeah. And I thought, I've had a little trial. Let's go to Hebrews 12. Turn to Hebrews 12 and I'll talk. Yeah, I had a little trial. I was playing with my little grandchildren and they cornered me, Mr. Rocco and young Savannah, and they were determined to get me. And I went one way and another way and they had these non-slip shoes. And over I went like a sack of potatoes. And I thought, a chunk off my vertebrae? It's like a kick in the back. Why? Why did this happen? Father, what did you do that for? Well, I don't know. I thought about it. And I thought to myself, well, could it be that you were falling asleep, Roy? Could it be that he gave you a whack and he was saying, wake up. I mean, that's the way we need to look. That's the way we need to look at these things that happen to us. I need you to look at your life. It's not bad luck. We don't exercise blame. We say, what's going on? What is happening here? Is there a lesson? Hebrews 12. And, let's look at a few more scriptures and just ponder. Let's have a reality check. And, I like the example of the Apostle Paul. He's full of encouragement. Hebrews 12, and let's start at verse 4. You have not yet resisted to the point of losing blood in your struggle against sin. God has a way of opening our minds and saying, okay, look over here. Right? Look. Pain does it. Uncertainty does it. Doubt does it. When you can't work it out, it does it. Verse 5, and you have already forgotten the admonition that he addresses you as to sons. Addresses, it also means addresses to you as to daughters. Same thing. My son, my daughter, do not despise the there's another word we just can't. We can't pass by chastening, correction of the Lord, nor grow weary. Oh, not again. Nor grow weary of being reproved by him. Verse 6. For whom the Lord loves, if he loves you, he's going to whack you. It's the way it works. The Lord loves, he chastens, and he gently, easily, not too hard, don't hurt. No. He doesn't spare. He severely disciplines every son, every daughter whom he receives. Right? Think about the example I gave before. If the opponents of General George S. Patton at the time were not careful, they would end up in their sparring with the saber. They would end up black and blue. You can bet they had their wits about them. That's why I use the example. Same thing. Verse 7, if you endure, you have to endure chastening. Let's look at the words. God is dealing with you as a father with his sons, as a father with his daughters. For who is the son, who is the daughter whom the father does not chasten? Well, you know what? This brings me back to when I was bringing up my boys. I used to say at the time, early days, I felt like, the actor Fred McMurray. He was in a show called My Three Sons, and I had my three sons. And I would chasten this way. My system was to explain what they did wrong, and then they had to bend over, and I had what we have for table tennis bats. Right? Bend over and whack. Now, if they moved, to try and avert and avoid the whack, they would get two more. And it was so humorous to see them bend over, backside in the air, dead straight, and whack, they got a good one. But that was only one. They wouldn't get two. We wouldn't have to do it again. You see, they learnt the first time. They stood very, very, you know, and it's amazing. These bats, I had a lot of them, these table tennis bats. You know, they're not like baseball bats or anything like that. No, that's rude. It's bad. But boy, we found about 10 one time we were looking through the house, because they'd always disappear. And the so-and-sos used to hide them, you see. In conspicuous places. Anyway, and I ended up, I thought, well, the paddle is not a good name. The whacker is not a good name. I ended up calling the instrument of punishment, gave it a name, Harry. That's what it was. I'm sorry if anybody's called Harry, but my kids, as they were growing up, they heard the word Harry. It was discipline. Okay. So verse 8, but if you are without chastisement, if they were without that correction, they do what they want. But now they are, each one of my boys is respectful. Each one of them. You know, they love dad, they love mum, and they love to be with us, and it's wonderful. Okay, but if you are without, verse 8, chastisement, of which all are partakers, nobody is not disciplined. We are all partakers of God's discipline. Right? Then you are bastards, or in, I think the American pronunciation is bastards. Illegitimate, and not sons, and not daughters. Verse 9, furthermore, we have had our fleshly fathers who chastened us, and we respected them. Yeah. Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? You know, should we not all the more willingly be subject to the Father of spirits and live forever? Verse 10. For in the first case, they chastened us for a few days. Again, the time comparison, only a little while. A few days in whatever way seemed good to them. But in the second case, with God the Father, right? He chastens us for our own benefit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. We looked at the time factor. His face shines like the sun in full strength. Is it worth it? Is it worth it being put back on your heels? Is the correction worth it? You know, the reward is to inherit everlasting superlative life. Life, a life, an existence with endless accomplishment, endless achievement. And I put here, look, just a sidebar, you can jot this scripture down, John 10:10. Easy to remember, John 10:10. It says, the thief does not come except to steal and kill and destroy. I, Jesus Christ, have come so that they may have life. We've talked about life, real life, and that they may have it more abundantly. This is not abundant life. Okay, so the next subhead that I put for myself is abundant life, long life. Verse 11, let's keep on going there. Now truly no chastisement for the present seems to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, afterwards, it's hard at the start. You know, anything worthwhile is difficult. If you're going to be in a race, if you're training, if you're, you know, training to lift weights or training to run a mile or run a marathon, it ain't easy. You've got to put some sweat in there. What did we say? Pint of sweat, gallon of blood at the start. That's what it means. Sweat, hard work, right? But grievous, nevertheless, afterwards it yields what? The peaceful fruits of righteousness to those who have been. There we go again. I get stuck. Who have been what? Who have been exercised by it. The encouragement, verse 12. Therefore, right, the reward is great. Therefore, lift up the hands that are hanging down and revive the weakened knees. Hands, knees, what are we talking about? Oh, did I pray today? I'm not sure. Marathon. Seeking God. Prayer. On your knees. That's what it's talking about. Don't get down when the going gets tough. When the going gets tough, what does the saying go? The tough get going. Regardless, keep moving. It says, and make, verse 13, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame, okay, it's lame. We're lame. And our natural state is lame. We have to be pummeled, right? We have to be shaped. We're lame. And if it stays lame, if it stays like that, what happens? Be turned aside, but rather let it be healed. We need healing. We need to grow. Okay, tough means you'll be healed. When it's tough, we're strengthened. The message is to look to the reward after the tough stuff, after the hard stuff, let's go to 2 Corinthians 11. But did the Apostle Paul know what the heck he was talking about here? 2 Corinthians 11. Did God instruct him about tough? Did he? And looking back at his life, what are we talking about here? 2 Corinthians 11. Did he get a sense of reason? Did he understand the why? Did he understand the purpose of hardship, of pain, of doubt, etc., etc., etc.? 2 Corinthians 11, verse 23. Are they servants of Christ? You're cutting in here about his trials. Are they servants of Christ? I'm speaking as if I was out of my mind. Now, here he's saying, I could be self-exalting here, but I'm really crazy, but I have to say it. This is nuts, but I've got to tell you. So am I, above and beyond measure, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in imprisonments more frequent, in deaths often. Okay. So, verse 24, you know, he was saying this. I don't want to say it, but he was compelled to write this. I have to write it. Okay, verse 24, we look at what happened to this guy. Imagine this. Verse 24, 5 times from the Jews I received 40 stripes less one. Does that mean 39? Excuse me. 30. He got 39 whacks, right? 39. How many times? With rods? With rods. They don't do this today. 39, right? And how many times did he cop it? 5 times. Man, he didn't stop it the first time. He kept on doing what he had to do. Verse 25. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Sorry, did I say that? 40 stripes 5 times. And then rods. That's another one. 3 times. Ooh. Once I was stoned, he was nearly dead. He was dragged away. He's dead. They thought he was dead. Stoned once. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Imagine ship. Here we go again. Where am I? What's happening? Oh yeah, another trial. I have to trust God to get me out of this one. Once, twice, 3 times, lost at sea, shipwrecked. A day and a night I spent in the deep. Well, not lost at sea, but shipwrecked. You know, it would have been saying, no, oh, here we go again. Verse 26, I've been in journeyings often. You and I have a home to go to. This guy didn't have a home. In perils of rivers, in perils of robbers, in perils from my own race, in perils from Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the desert, in perils on the sea, in perils amongst false brethren. He didn't have to watch a horror picture, did he? He thought, oh, when's the next time? Woo. He was continually kept on his toes. Verse 27, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger, in thirst, in fastings often, in cold, nakedness. Yeah, in 2 Timothy 4:13, you can just jot that down. He said, look, when you come, bring the cloak that I left. He was freezing. He forgot a coat. Now, what would happen to you or me if we didn't have warm clothes? We'd buy another one, wouldn't we? He couldn't buy it. He couldn't buy another at the marketplace. He said, bring me that one. I'm cold. I'm freezing. Right? Okay, so no money. In hunger, in thirst, no money. Right? Tough times. Verse 28, besides all these things from the world outside, pressing on me daily is the care of all the churches. Okay, I'll quote an example. Keep your place here. We're still going to go here. In Romans 1:9, you can jot that down. He says, for God is my witness. Okay, what we're talking about? The cares of the church, whom I serve in my spirit in the gospel of his son, how unceasingly I make mention of you in my prayers, always beseeching if by any means I shall now be prospered by the will of God to come to you at last. Verse 11, for I am longing to see you so that I may impart to you some spiritual gift in order that you may be established. The cares. And that verse 12, and that I may be comforted together with you through faith in each one of us. both yours and mine. Verse 13, on the other hand, I do not wish you to be ignorant, brethren, that many, it says many times, hey, look, I'm not neglecting you, but many times I proposed to come to you, but I was hindered until the present. Continuing, verse 29. Who is weak and I'm not weak? This is his state of mind. Who is offended and I do not burn? Verse 30. If it is necessary for me to boast, I will boast in the things concerning my weaknesses. That's his strength. It's your strength. It's my strength. The weaknesses. The God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who is blessed into the ages of eternity, knows that I do not lie. In Damascus, the governor under Aretas, the king, was guarding the city of Damascus, because he decided to arrest me. But I was let down. Remember the account? He was let down in a basket. just squeezed out through the window by the wall and escaped from his hands. Okay. Well, I'll just move on. I can't fit it all in, but I will talk about 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. Now all these, I'm going to change things around a little bit, just a little bit. Now all these things happened to Paul as an example and were written for our admonition on whom the ends of the ages are coming. Right? A time when many shall run to and fro, and unless the days were shortened, there would be no flesh saved alive these days. Verse 12, therefore let the one who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Verse 13, no trial or hardship has come upon you except what is common to mankind. For God, who is faithful, will not permit you to be punished or pushed beyond what you are able to bear. But with the difficulty, he will make a way of escape so that you may be able to bear it. He'll get you out of the bind. That's an example. That's an example. Okay. One more example. John 15 verse 1. John 15 says, I'm the vine, I'm the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Now, what's the picture here? Verse 2. What does he do? He takes away every branch in me that does not bear fruit. He cleanses, prunes. If you're not pruned, if there's no pain, you're cleansed. Goodbye. But when you're pruned, it says, right? When you're cut, right? He cleanses, he prunes each one that bears fruit in order what? So you can grow. So you can bear more fruit. Proverbs 6. Let's go to Proverbs 6 and verse 4. Now, you know, what we could do is talk about Luke 19 about the promises, the parable of the pounds, how they had to increase the pounds. We can look at Matthew 25, the parable of the talents, how they had to increase their talents, right? We advise, admonished to increase talents. But, you know, that deals with the end result. But Proverbs 6, starting verse 4, it deals with the now. It deals with the today. It deals with tomorrow that becomes today as we live day to day, right? Admonishment. Wake up. Wake up. Proverbs 6 verse 4. Do not give sleep to your eyes or slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself as a gazelle from the hunter's hand and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. Counsel. Sit on your loins. It's okay. No! No! This is urgent. This is a battle. This is life and death. It says, go to the ant, sluggard. If we are in a sluggard of a mood, and we fall into this inactivity, Go to the ant sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Who, having no guide, overseer or ruler. We've got admonitions. We've got encouragements, right? But the ant, as God has made, this little thing, insect, creature, provides food in the summer, verse 7, having no guide, overseer or ruler, right? No one looking over its shoulder. It provides her food in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. And then here it comes. This is what it's about. This is why all that led up to this. This command. How long will you sleep? Oh, sluggard, apply that. I'm okay. No. Examine. When will you arise out of your sleep? What happens? Verse 10, yet a little sleep and a little slumber and a little inactivity, folding of the hands to rest. And so shall your poverty come as one who travels, and your want, what you don't have, like an armed man. Okay, to conclude, let's go to Revelation chapter 21. We're going to go right to the end of the book. Revelation chapter 21. Christ says he's the first and he's the last. He's the beginning and he's the ending. Revelation 21 verse 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. New ball game. A new earth. A different universe. What's it going to be like? Who wants to be there? Okay. No more physical life. No more fish. No more birds. Now it's the new ball game is that it is unending. No handbreadth, right? No. Unending, right? Not even as long as the diameter of the sun in handbreadths. It's more than light years. The light year is I think we all know, the distance that light travels in a year, and the light travels at the speed of 186,000 miles every second. I think it's 225,000 kilometers every second in a year. Long time, right? No more. It's almost beyond our comprehension. Okay, verse 2. And I, John, saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Verse 3. And I heard a great voice from heaven say, behold. I wonder, that would shake your whole being. Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them. Wow. And they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. Verse 4. This is a treasure. This one is a treasure. Did I say that? I don't know whether I did. I've got to tell you again. That's a treasure. It's beautiful. This is wonderful to keep in heart and mind. And God, verse 4, shall wipe away every tear from their eyes. All the hardship, all the pain, all the difficulties. He's saying, I'm going to make it up to you. Keep going. I'm going to make it up. And there shall not be any more death. No more. It's finished. Finito la musica, or sorrow, or crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, because the former things have passed away. Verse 5, and he who sits on the throne said, behold, listen, look, let it sink in. I make all things new. Different story, new ball game. Then he said to me, write, for these words are true and faithful. In conclusion, I'll just repeat the title of this message. Strive now, then your reward will come.